He's staring at me, though.
Well, he's waiting for you to kick off the episode. Our producer, Leo, is in the room with us this time.
That's right. He wanted to come down here and make sure we're doing everything
he's, up to code. I'm making some technical adjustments, you know. Little tweaks. Things we don't understand. What do you think, Leo? Are we doing everything right? I know. Yeah? I know. We're trying to do better. I do talk too much. You're right. Austin should have more of a say. I agree, 100%. We're making some changes.
Hello, and welcome to The Picture Show with Austin and Phil Rude. I'm Austin Rude, and I'm the son.
And I'm Phil Rude, I'm the dad. Every week, we watch a movie, we get on mic, we talk about it. And this week, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of movies.
All the movies we did this season.
Season 7, that's right.
That's it. It's a big season. Before we get into that, though, I did want to correct something from last week.
Okay.
I had kind of touched on the Welcome to Derry miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked a little more into that after recording. You know, good podcasters do that before they get on mic.
Post-research, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I did look up, it is still in the works, it's still heavy in production. This prequel show is going to be set in Derry in the 60s, I presume 27 years before the events of these two movies that we just covered. Because that would make sense with, if it was the 80s started in, the 60s.
Or the original 50s. The 60s would have been glossed over with nothing going on there.
True, but the synopsis for this show says the 60s, so...
No, but that's what I'm saying. It must be tied to the movie, where it's like 27 years before the 80s.
Yes.
Which would put it in the 60s.
Right, so they're kind of moving away from the book timeline,
right.
I guess. However, it's being produced by the director of these movies, Andy Muschietti, and his sister, Barbara Muschietti, along with Jason Fuchs. She's actually done a lot of things. I saw her IMDb. And then Jason Fuchs, he's new to this kind of franchise. I don't think he worked on the other two It movies. But I had said that Bill Skarsgård would be returning for his role. That was correct when this was originally announced. It is now no longer correct. As of 2023, he has left the project, and it is set to star Steven Ryder, best known for playing Blake Towers in Daredevil and a few other TV shows and movies here and there, but it's unknown what his role in the story is going to be. So,
okay,
yeah, we kind of don't know who's playing Pennywise in that show, but I just wanted to correct that real quick before we get into this season.
It could be one of those things where it's in development so long that now Skarsgård is committed to another project, you know, like...
It could be.
If it's one of those things, Jason Fuchs, it looks like, has... he was in It Chapter 2. As Richie's manager, like a small role there. But yeah, he has some interesting writing credits. Wonder Woman story by Pan. One of the Ice Age movies. But not a ton. Hmm. I don't know much about this guy.
Yeah, so it's kind of like there's a lot of holes in this story here. Like we don't know much about Welcome to Derry, but we know they're working on it, and currently they're not because it was set to start filming a few months ago, and the writers and actors strike has since taken over Hollywood. But you know, as much as I love it, I'll wait 27 years for Welcome to Derry if it means that these people are being paid properly. So I have no problems with that, but I do hope we get to see this show eventually. I'm interested in it.
It is. The IMDb page is really strange because it's got cast members listed, but no character names. So,
right, so we don't know who series
cast: Madeline Stowe, James Remar, you know, but no, playing who are the, you know, right. It's just sort of like, are they going cart before the horse and getting people attached and then like, okay, we'll figure this out later. You know, like what, you know,
I
what
hope is not. This?
That's really strange.
I hope they're just being elusive with what the story is.
It could be. Yeah. That's really interesting.
I thought so.
But yeah, we'll see. It could go either way, honestly.
There's still a lot in the air, but I do like that the original director is tied to this and seems heavily involved.
He's producing, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. It's like so many Stephen King things, it can go any direction, you know, like...
I want to call it while it's up in the air and say it'll be good, but
especially if it's going to be a add-on series that isn't from source material, you know, like those kind of things are always true. A little bit more like,
although that's something
we'll see where this goes.
HBO seems to be doing that a lot. They're doing, this is an HBO series.
Okay.
Welcome to Derry. They're also making, a Dune series about the Sisterhood of Nuns that is going to be a mini series.
Well, yeah, you got to have some HBO. Girl bosses, so it's got to be about the Bene Gesserit. So,
of course. No, but I think they like to produce these like mini series,
yeah,
that are tied to movies.
They made the Watchmen series, which is, it's good, but it's also unnecessary. You know what I mean? Like, it becomes, like, this idea of...
It's bonus material,
Let's make this extra stuff that isn't necessary in some ways contradicts original source material, but it's the name recognition thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a safe bet for a studio.
Kind of, yeah.
So I understand it from a business perspective, at least.
I guess so, but if we're going to talk about HBO just making smart business calls... we're all watching what it's doing to the creative content of the HBO. Like, we talk about the Max app as a whole. Like, it's a fucking mess. Because they're making business decisions. They're scrapping entirely completed movies for business decisions. And it's just like, well, what do you do as a movie studio when you don't... Everything is... business. I know everybody's gonna come out and go, it's always been a business. It has always been a business, but there's always been a creative drive behind it. You're selling creativity, you're selling art, you're selling, but when everything comes down to dollars and cents, I mean, that's what the whole writer's strike was about.
Right.
It was not valuing creativity. It was about
they're just playing it safe.
Oh, like, we can have AI do this. You know, this idea of like the business decision is to have machines do this work.
Right. No, creativity comes with like big risks.
It's right,
and so I guess they don't want to do that
anymore. It's all gone to the back burner, the creative side of it, and it's all just front end business. It's like you may as well go and trade on Wall Street if all you want to do is trade, you know, numbers and shit like that.
But, I'm buying stock in this franchise. That's kind of how it is now. But anyway, Welcome to Derry.
We'll see. I'll check it out when it happens.
When it eventually drops, we'll be talking about it.
Yeah.
But let's focus back on this season, because we just finished season 7, and that was quite a few movies that we did.
Yeah. We got a really wide swath of movies, too.
We did. We didn't have a theme this season, so we kind of... We went all over
the
place.
We pulled it from everywhere. I think we have a really diverse selection of movies this time, with the exception of maybe like our Halloween section, which was all pretty focused, pretty down the middle of Stephen King, you know. But Outside of that, you want to run down the list here?
Yeah, we kicked off this season with our 100th episode celebration, Fight Club. We revisited
Fight Club. Yeah,
that was really cool. We both kind of picked that one along with 101 Dalmatians.
101 Dalmatians for
101st episode.
Right. I was trying to think just here. Now. I'm like, how did we land on that? Oh yeah, 101.
Numbers. That was right. Really it.
It's all numbers driven.
And then I picked Jaws as my first pick for this season.
Right. And then I went with The Illusionist. That's the French animated movie, The Illusionist.
Yep. And then I did Emily the Criminal.
I brought Out of Sight.
Then we watched Hacksaw Ridge.
And then we're into, I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute. Then we're into our Halloween season where we watched The Shining, followed by Dr. Sleep.
And then Black Phone, a dual pick, and It Chapter 2.
That's right. So, yeah, I want
to... list. It's very weird. We kind of bounced around, but I like it. I think it's cool.
I'm kind of proud of us that we brought things from, like, one of the biggest blockbusters of all time to independent movies like Emily the Criminal, mm-hmm. or, you know, the foreign movie, The Illusionist, and then just some kind of sleeper movies like Hacksaw Ridge. I mean, we were just sort of like all over the map.
We picked a lot of genres, yeah.
Just trying stuff out this time, and I think it turned out well. I really like this list, even if I didn't like every movie on the list, you know?
Yeah, and we had... two animated movies. I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't do a lot of animated movies now that I think about it. We've done Soul.
We did Soul. We did Totoro.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we can count the Godzilla movies as animated. All of the CGI heavy blockbusters are essentially animated movies. But, as far as like, traditionally animated movies, especially these 2D, like right. kind of old
this
school.
This is like a throwback. And as we talked about in those episodes, like we love the art animation with 101 Dalmatians.
I love 2D animation. Yeah, for sure. And this is, I think, I really enjoyed watching two animated movies on this season.
It made me think maybe we should do a all animated season.
We could totally do a cartoon season. That would be really fun.
We'll see, though. I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah. Let me see. When looking at this list, I know we said it's very random, but does anything stick out as a kind of a sore thumb to you?
As far as quality or...
Well, quality or just, like, not fitting in with the rest of them.
I mean, that's the wide variety of movies. I think they're all kind of sore thumbs. Nothing really outside of, like, the two animated movies and all the Stephen King stuff. Nothing, this isn't a puzzle. This is all just random pieces from different puzzles.
That's true, yeah.
I think that kind of... I don't know, that adds to it. I think, if anything, I would say Jaws kind of stands out. It's the most unique time period.
Also the most, I would dare to say the most iconic
out
of any of these.
I think that is the big sort of tentpole, everybody knows and loves this movie. It's considered a classic. The Shining kind of works in there, but The Shining is more... It's not a crowd pleaser in the way Jaws is.
It's not
is.
As mainstream. Yeah, it's a little more
I think so. I think Jaws kind of almost stands out as the weird one because it's the most mainstream one, you know?
That makes sense, yeah. And I did really enjoy revisiting Jaws. Like,
oh, I did too.
I've seen Jaws, but I feel like that was my first time... seeing Jaws as like a fully realized adult. Like, my brain is awake and I saw what they're doing with the movie and saw it as more than just like a dumb action movie, kind of.
Right.
You know?
It's not about a guy trying to kill a shark. It's about small town politics. It's about doing the right thing, even when it's the unpopular thing. And it's about overcoming a fear of water.
Right.
You know, like, it's about all of these bigger themes. And you don't realize that until you're an adult watching. I think maybe that should be the marker of when you're an adult in our society, is when you watch Jaws and you understand all the subtext of it. It's like, oh, today I am a man kind of thing.
Well, you can really tell it's clicking when you don't read the boring adult conversations as boring adult conversations. Right. Like, the first time I watched Jaws, I would just tune out, like, the boat scene. What are they talking about?
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Get to the action. The
Indianapolis.
And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah.
I feel the same way about, like, the city council scenes. And all the scenes where he's arguing with the mayor about closing the beaches. I'm like, this is, like, the heart of the movie.
It's the movie, yeah.
It's great. So, yeah, I think that was a great one to revisit too. Again, it's, for me, it was one of those things where I, like The Shining, have resisted doing podcasts about this movie. It's like, everybody has done a podcast on this movie. Everybody has talked about this movie. Essays have been written. Film school theses or whatever the plural is, have been written about Jaws. It's one of the most talked about movies of all time. What do we have to add to it? And that's when we sit down and talk about it, that's when I remember, like, oh, I do a podcast because this is my way of talking about what this movie means to me. Mm-hmm. And having a conversation with what this movie means to you, and putting those both on the table. And I got some real value out of talking about movies that I didn't think I needed to talk about this year because of that very reason, that they are the most podcasted about movies.
I will say, Dad, you're a little like a hipster when it comes to, like, your movie selection. Just in, like, you're like, I don't want to talk about Star Wars. Everyone's talked about Star Wars.
It's less about hipster, like, I'm not pretending I don't like these movies. It's more humble than that. I think, in that I don't think I have anything to add to the conversation about these movies. But the reality of doing a white guy movie podcast is you are doing this for yourself.
Yes.
Like, it's so, it is sort of like,
here's the secret, Dad. Yeah. Neither do any of those other guys.
Yes, I know. They just beat us to the punch by 10 years.
Listen, no one needs to post an 8-hour YouTube video on why the sequel trilogy sucked.
Right.
But they're gonna do it.
Yes.
Like, that's just the fun of
it. I got so many Shining YouTube videos around that same time. Mm-hmm. I was trying to break down a scene from The Shining and draw it as a comic page. So I was, like, looking for that scene.
So the algorithm picked it up.
So many Shining video essays, conspiracy theories, everything coming at me for, like, 2 or 3 weeks. I'm just finally weeding them out and getting more it videos instead. But it is true. Like, everybody talks about these movies, and that's the kind of thing that makes me go, I don't need to add to the conversation. But that's a long way of saying, I really got a lot out of discussing these movies with you this time. So it is sort of like, maybe I can bring more kind of mainstream big movies into this that I feel like I have a unique personal relationship with, because that's what I felt about Jaws and The Shining both.
That's fair. I'm glad I was able to teach you that your opinion matters.
I am really appreciative that we got to talk about Jaws, and I also loved getting your perspective. Not just on the movie, but on the 70s aesthetic of movies.
That was in several movies and this season,
I really, really liked hearing you pick up on that and talk about how much you loved the long takes and the medium shots and kind of you're in that way, you were sharing with me what I love about 70s movies and why I've in the last couple of years been kind of going back and rewatching all these movies from the 70s, because they're done in this way that modern movies aren't. And it's one of those things that a lot of modern movie audiences don't appreciate because it just looks weird to them. Mm-hmm. So when you hear younger people go, I really like that aesthetic and I think it's cool, it's like, yes, you're getting what I, you know, it's not just, I don't just feel like the old man going, they don't make movies like this anymore. It's like, young people get it too. It's really fun.
But also you're like, you grew up with that kind of movie style. Yeah. So like, then I'm able to point out what's different.
You
I'm
can
like,
see it a little clearer probably.
I see it because I'm not used to that. It's kind of like, there's another, I really like that aesthetic of 70s movies. I also really like the aesthetic of early 2000s TV. Like, there's a specific way that they lit a lot of shots of, like...
Give me an example.
I'm thinking The West Wing.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff like that where, like, they just do, like, light coming in from the windows.
Oh, it's more like...
And it looks so realistic.
Natural
to me.
Yeah. Light, or it's made to look like natural light. It's not...
It's definitely not natural light, but it's lighting design. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That is made to look... less studio,
and it looks a little grainy too, and they do a lot of long shots or just quiet moments.
Sure, you're talking Aaron TV Sorkin like that. In that example of, yeah, that's the walk and talk.
Yes,
you know,
well,
like
there's other examples of early 2000s, but that's the one in my mind right now of like, it's very similar kind of in a way.
Yeah, I don't notice as much TV, but now that you're mentioning that, I used to watch a show called The Shield.
Okay.
It's a cop show.
I've seen clips of it.
About corrupt cops. It's really, really good. It's probably on Hulu because I think they have all the FX stuff. Mm. But that was shot in a like shaky cam sort of pseudo documentary style. Not like The Office.
It's not a mockumentary, but
right.
I know what you mean. It's
but
like...
it is shot very... quick zooms.
It's like POV kind
yes,
of stuff.
Yes, and it's, I do remember it at the time being like a little jarring. And it was, I think a lot of it was budgetary. Like, this is how we cover up the low-ish budget of the
right,
show.
Make it look on purpose.
Is to just sort of like, no Steadicam. But yeah, it was a really unique look to that time. Also early 2000s.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, I hear you. That's cool.
Find it funny. We always wind up
yeah,
off topic completely.
also, what we do when we talk about a blockbuster, we end up talking about nine other movies.
We did not review 2000s TV at this time.
No.
Was there anything that you thought was terrible?
Terrible?
Let me just say that. Like, What doesn't meet the caliber of quality far as the rest of these movies?
Hacksaw Ridge is the one that stands out the most to me.
That's the one
I
was going to
say. Not even as a straight-up bad movie. It's just forgettable. It's just, it doesn't stand out to me at all. I forgot we'd watched it until I looked at the list. It's... There's like I said when we reviewed it, there's... fractions of an interesting movie in there. There's a seed in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't come out, and the whole movie just felt trite and forgettable to me. And the thing that I'm remembering right now is because you were unfamiliar with who Mel Gibson was as a whole.
Correct.
The reference point, I think... maybe is best for you, and I might be wrong here, but he's the dad in Signs.
Wait, he's an actor to
Mel Gibson?
Oh, yes. No, we've covered that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the dad in Signs that is like slowly going crazy. Like the former pastor, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of the main family?
Yeah.
You're talking like
Yeah, he's the main guy in Signs.
Ooh.
Probably like the last
but I like that really, movie, really,
you
Dad.
Can like Don't... that movie. Look, I like a lot of Mel Gibson movies. He's a problematic person, but he's made some really great things both as a director and as an actor over the years, which is why I think Hacksaw Ridge disappointed me so much, because it's like, I know Mel Gibson is a capable film director.
Capable of more,
And this is just so pandering and disappointing to me. It comes off as like one of these evangelical Christian movies, like a Kirk Cameron movie.
Well, that's with kind a budget. Of what he became is, if you look at his filmography, like he went from, it's like he slowly went off the deep end.
Oh, he did like, the Passion of the Christ, and which I do think you can make movies about Christ, and you can make movies about Christian themes, and you can do them in a interesting artistic way. But I don't think Hacksaw Ridge was it. You know, I don't think there's anything artistic or interesting about the way they portrayed that story.
No, it was very basic.
Yeah.
Huge disappointment for me. I want to scrap it from my mind and from this season list. I'm like,
it's here.
We're done with it.
We talked about it. Yeah. Like that's, you know, we can't like everything that we watch, and it's true. To be honest when we don't. And I think we gave valid reasons for not liking that movie. It wasn't just like, well, it's this movie that lionizes Christians, and I'm not Christian, so I'm not gonna, you know, like, it's not that. I think
we had an interesting conversation around it. I'd rather not revisit it.
Sure,
you know?
I don't mean to drag the whole thing up again, but just like that I think was the low point of this season for me.
It's dragging up a lot of triggering memories now.
Sure.
No.
I don't mean to put you through that again, Oz, but
I have PTSD from watching war movies.
is that your pick for that category as well?
That is definitely the lowest point of this season, in my opinion.
Well, I'll
nothing else even comes like close to that. Looking at like, I'm like, oh, what other movie did I like or not like? And it's none of them.
No,
I liked all of these movies.
I liked all the rest of
them.
I would say the only other one that came in a little lackluster is 101 Dalmatians. And I don't say that because I don't think that's a bad movie. I just think it's kind of a bit of a slightly boring children's movie. It's not in our wheelhouse. I will happily watch that with Leo in a couple years. You know, it's a very cute movie. The animation is gorgeous. I love it for that. And it has some genuinely good parts to it. But overall, like, I was kind of bored through a chunk of that movie.
It's not a super exciting movie.
Right, but
it's got a charm to it, though, that I really find endearing.
There is that, but I would just also put that on the bottom half of movies that we watched this time around. Everything else stood out to me as really like an excellent movie.
That's fair.
In some way, shape, or form.
Did anything really stand out to you? Was there like a...
anything new?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Hacksaw Ridge might be the only thing I watched that was brand new to me.
You'd seen all the rest of these?
Yes.
That makes sense.
But out of... as far as just being like excellent, I'm going to knock Jaws and The Shining off the list, because those are just, those are gimmies,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Like, but I would say, Emily the Criminal is right up there near the top. I think Emily the Criminal is a wildly interesting and well done independent movie. And I think we both kind of champion that movie as something that we want more people to see.
Mm-hmm. And, it's really good.
And things like that. I'm really stoked that you brought that to the show this season, because I had a great time watching that again.
I did too. And I actually, after that episode, I did some more research, and it turns out they just hired a documentary crew to follow Aubrey Plaza
does, his credit card fraud.
Yeah. Like, that was just her living her real life, and they caught it all on camera. So it being a documentary makes it even cooler. No.
I like Emily the Criminal on the same level that I like Uncut Gems. It's watching somebody spiral downwards, and you know it's not going to end well.
It's like Breaking Bad. And, it's and Walter you're White's kind of character just
watching
arc.
Someone spin out. Yes.
Yeah.
And let me toot my own horn. I also loved... do you have a... hold on a second.
You can talk about things not okay, on yeah.
I just want to, if you're going to cover... you also have on here, what were you happy to revisit? And I'll roll this in, because another high point was something I brought to the show was Out of Sight. I loved revisiting Out of Sight.
I was going to talk about that. That one was...
Okay, you go ahead, because I'll just gush about it.
That one was brand new to me.
Okay.
When making this list for this season, I actually forgot that we'd watched this.
Mm-hmm.
But only because I thought I'd watched it, like, last season. Sure. I thought this was last season. And it stuck with me so much. Like, there's something so charming about that movie.
Yeah.
And I really liked George Clooney, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I liked him in it. And so that was kind of, like, the standout of this season for me. Because it went above all of the other movies for me, just in terms of, like, surprising me.
That's great.
Like I was like, oh, Dad's going to make me watch a crime movie. Okay. And it knocked me off of my feet. I was like, whoa, that was really fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really liked that
I'm
one.
Glad because, you know, we talk about it all the time. When I can introduce a movie to somebody and they get as much out of it as I do, it's like, oh, yes. Cool. Like, mm-hmm. mission accomplished.
And I also want to point out that these two movies go, like, side by side in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
True Romance and Out of Sight.
Sure.
I feel like there's something similar there.
There is, yeah.
And I like both of those movies, so...
It's that pulpy crime thing. Out of Sight is based on the Elmore Leonard novel. And True Romance is a script by Tarantino, who... we talked about in the episode, basically apes the style of Elmore Leonard.
So it's all kind of coming all, from the same
it's
source.
It's pop culture references. It's small talk conversations. It's these...
quippy moments.
Yes. It's these charming characters. It's bad guys who are fun to hang out with. And
is Pulp Fiction similar to this?
Pulp Fiction is Tarantino as well.
I know it's Tarantino, but is it like the same kind of genre?
It's the same kind of conversations. It's a crime story. It's a little bit darker. Okay. It's quite a bit darker. But it's the same sort of like, let's take criminals. Let's show you that they're really... not as bright as you think they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're also having these conversations. It's a really fun genre. It's why I've glommed on to Tarantino over the years. He got his hooks in me real early with True Romance and Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. And you just go, oh, this is an amazing style. And then I discovered Elmore Leonard through the movie adaptations that were being made there. And I'm just like, oh, this is all great. Mm-hmm. And so, these are very similar, and I think I mentioned it in the Our Out of Sight episode. They come together in Jackie Brown, which is Tarantino adapting an Elmore Leonard novel. And Jackie Brown is wonderful. It is just an unbelievable, brilliant adaptation of a brilliant book, where Tarantino kind of makes it a... 90s era blaxploitation crime movie at the same time. It's great. It's really, really great.
Okay.
But yeah, there's definitely a connection in those. And there's a connection to some earlier movies that we watched with Logan Lucky. Yeah. And Haywire. These are both...
I always forget about Haywire. Yeah.
Steven Soderbergh movies, you know. Haywire's a lot darker. It's not so much of a straight crime movie. But like Logan Lucky being the heist movie, the caper movie, it's in that same wheelhouse. Kind of dumb criminals, kind of weird comedy throughout. And I think Logan Lucky is also a great fucking crime movie.
It's funny because people say all the time that Pulp Fiction is like a great movie. It's the greatest. You gotta watch it. And for that exact reason, I have not. Because I'm tired of people telling
me what guess to what watch. We're gonna watch next season.
But all of these movies that you've brought to the table, I watch them and then I love them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, these are all kind of like Pulp Fiction. Maybe I will like Pulp Fiction.
I think you would.
Like, it's like... making me curious enough to want to watch it and be like, maybe it is good and it's not just like people tooting their own horn.
It's one of those things where the hype of the movie has, you have to divorce yourself from it. You're like, it's never going to live up to this unbelievable hype. That's film bros have pumped. I mean, it's like Fight Club. When you strip away all the people who missed the point, you strip away all the 21-year-old film students who hang the poster on their dorm room wall, you strip away all that and you look at that movie and you see it for the dark comedy that it is and the satirical takes on modern masculinity, it's a brilliant movie, and you can really appreciate it for what it is.
That's just it, but as you can see in our first episode versus our 100th, yeah. I didn't like it the first time I watched it because I was looking at it through the lens of what fans had told me that this movie was. Right. And so, like, just looking at the movie itself is really hard to do when, like, it's such a big movie. Right. It's just so hard to divorce
it's so it from iconic. It's the so fandom. Yes. I watched Taxi Driver when I was around your age for the first time. And likewise, I didn't understand. I'm like, people talk about this movie. It's this supposedly brilliant movie. I knew True Romance was very inspired by Taxi Driver in some ways. And I was just like, I don't get this. What is this? You know, because it's not necessarily plot driven. It's character driven.
Right.
And there's all this subtext and there's stuff about Vietnam in there. But it's all in the subtext. And it's all very rooted in the time that this thing was made. And, you know, I watched that movie today and I'm like, this is one of the most brilliant things ever. You know, like, it's dark. It's not fun. But it's a wild, wild movie that is really, really smart in what it's talking about. And in those kind of ways, a lot of movies of the 70s to talk about that. Again, when I was your age, I didn't get them. I didn't understand what they were. They weren't direct enough. They looked cool, but I'm like, I don't get what this thing is saying.
Because they were being subtle.
And it takes a little while to warm up to stuff like that. I think a lot of people didn't like Pulp Fiction when it first came out because it's non-linear. It jumps back and forth in the timeline. It's telling four different stories, and then it runs them together somewhere in the middle. It's an oddly structured movie. It was Tarantino's first mainstream success, so a lot of people hadn't heard his dialogue before. It was really one of those things that sort of changed everything.
So it kind of confused
everyone. But there was a lot of people who were like, what is this? What, you know, what, you know, because it was so kind of revolutionary. But it's one of those things that I think the more people sat with it and the more people understood, like, oh, this is a style. This was just a little ahead of the curve, you know, and kind of sat with it. So if you were to watch that and not like it, you know, I'd kind of be like, give it another shot in a couple of years. And maybe you wouldn't like it then. It's not for everybody.
Well, I mean, that's what happened with Fight Club. I had to sit with it. I had to process it. I had to watch it a few times.
Fully
get it, you know.
And sometimes you still don't get it, and that's not that you don't get it, you don't like it.
Or sometimes you get it and don't like it.
And that's totally valid too. But yeah, it is so hard to divorce yourself from the iconography of this, or not, that's the wrong word.
I think that
you
word
know
fits.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's up on a pedestal so much that you're like, well, Jesus Christ, this thing's going to change my life. And it's right. Like, no, but
like I was on Instagram the other day and I saw like, it was like, people make these fan edits, like, they kind of put clips together mm-hmm. and, like, add a romance song to it. And it was that, but it was for Fight Club. And it was like, you met me at a weird time in my life. And then it was, like, out of nowhere, pop music. And yeah. It's, like, just all these clips of them being cute in the movie. And I'm like, did you not watch the movie? Yeah. And all of the comments are like, oh, if only I could have what they had. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It drives me insane. Did you not see it? Like, are you just dumb? I don't
know.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. It eclipses what the movie actually is at a certain
yes.
point.
You're making it something it's not.
Right. But
just like wish fulfillment or something.
Kind of. Yeah. I don't know. And then sometimes those fan edits are just really funny.
I mean, it is kind
of
funny.
I remember one that had like School of Rock, but it was like a horror movie. Like Jack Black was stalking the children. God. Like that shot of him like looking in the window at the classroom, and it's like ominous music, and then it like fades out. It's like, oh man, you can editing does a lot.
Editing does. It's pretty creepy.
Let's see. Was that your new to you?
Yeah. That,
out of sight?
That was. Nothing else here was really new to me except for, Hacksaw Ridge. And The Illusionist.
Oh, yeah.
The Illusionist was good. It was... What's funny is I kind of feel the way about that movie that you felt about 101 Dalmatians of, like, it's a little boring in the
okay,
middle.
Okay, yeah.
Like... I liked where we were going with this, but, like, I liked kind of the subtext that we discussed within that episode, like, about how, suddenly forgetting, about how, like, you know, the magic industry was failing
right.
and, like, believing in magic versus growing up and all that.
Right.
I thought it was a very cute story. I just... wasn't my favorite, if you will.
It's not a wildly exciting watch all the time.
Right.
So, yeah.
A lot of shots of, you know, Irish hills and...
Oh, yeah. Kind of... Yeah, the...
Walking.
Traveling.
Yeah.
Yeah. but I think, just like 101 Dalmatians, though, I think a lot of that is saved by having it beautifully animated. Like, mm-hmm. It's one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen.
And how the characters move, like,
yes,
they don't talk a lot, but you see their actions.
It's in the body language and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair criticism, but I still like that movie.
And also, Dr. Sleep was new to me as well.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still processing that one. I don't know where
sure.
to land on it. I like it. I don't love it. I like it as a follow-up to The Shining, but it's definitely... not The Shining.
No, it's not. And I think it goes with what we were talking about with HBO, like, the follow-up to The Thing. Is it necessary? You know, how much of it is true to the source material? This,
mm-hmm.
But ultimately, I do really like Dr. Sleep for what it is.
I do think
it's
this
is... It's definitely
a...
not The Shining. It's
yes.
not, you know...
But I do think, unlike the HBO thing, I think this is a necessary follow-up. Because...
Not necessary, but it follows the characters in a logical way.
Right. I found it necessary because after watching The Shining, my main thought is, like, yeah, the story's over, sure, but, like, how do they deal with that once they've survived?
Right.
Like, that
it's
was
the...
my...
The
what
PTSD
I held on
of it
to.
All.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So seeing that followed through in Dr. Sleep was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is my, you know, I talked about some of my personal reasons for why I latch onto those movies, too. You know, it's about addiction, it's about recovery, it's about anger, it's about helping people. Like, right. You know,
all of that one, is linked in there.
It's one side and the other. So I do really like that pair of movies. There is just a... There's a gap in... It's not a gap in quality. I don't want it to sound negative. There's a gap in style between the two that makes them feel like they aren't part of the same story.
The Shining feels a little more grounded, even though it's about ghosts and stuff. Like, it's...
And it also feels surreal. I mean, it is grounded, but we're not seeing, like, psychic vampires and CGI steam and... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I get what you're saying there. All the stuff that Kubrick intentionally left out of the movie...
is now back in Doctor
Sleep. Is in Doctor Sleep, yes.
Including the hotel blowing up, which was pretty cool. I do like that we got to see the end of the book.
The end of the book finally made it to the screen, yes.
It's about damn time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan, really good at, you know, adaptions as of late, you know?
Yeah. I haven't watched House of Usher. Let's get off track again.
I have, but I want to save my thoughts for it.
Did you finish it?
I have not recorded yet.
No, did you finish the series?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep, I finished it. I have a lot to say on it. Stay tuned, because I will be dropping my thoughts in a little solo episode.
Good.
Soon on this feed.
I watched the first episode, and I thought it was funny. I thought the characters were all ridiculous.
The way that the succession characters are funny
for being so ridiculous and out of touch, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like, they don't think they're being funny, but it's like, you are ridiculous people. It's a parody of rich people.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Mike Flanagan is always a little slow to start his series. So
yeah.
Once it gets going, episode 2 is where it starts picking up. Okay. And then it's really... gets a lot less funny. I'll say that. The laughs end pretty abruptly after episode 1.
Good to know.
Are there any opinions that you've had that have changed since recording? As we kind of sit on these thoughts and... have them brew in our head?
No, not terribly. I don't think so. I think most, like I said, I've seen most everything before. I'd kind of, you know, sat with what I thought of these movies for a while, or reinforced it by watching it again.
Right.
Like Emily the Criminal. You know, watch it once, I'm like, oh, what a really interesting movie. And then watch it again, and I'm like, oh, what a great movie. You know, like right, that kind of thing. Hacksaw Ridge is, you know, the one new one to me, and no, I haven't changed my opinion on that.
Please give it a second chance. I don't think I will.
I would say It Chapter 2 changed from the first time I saw it to watching it right on the heels of Chapter 1.
You hate it even more.
I think I came to appreciate that movie a little bit more. I still think it's a very, very flawed movie. In a lot of ways that we talked about, but I did come to appreciate the two of them working together as a single story a little bit more. There's still, you know, the Shining and Doctor Sleep have a stylistic gap. I think It Chapter 1 and It Chapter 2 have a quality gap. but that's not to say it's a worthless movie. I think there's a lot of merit to Chapter 2 that I maybe didn't appreciate as much the first time I watched him.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I really like It Chapter 2, so I'm
I really enjoyed watching them and finishing up our season with those two.
Yeah, and I still, as I said, I want more Pennywise.
Yeah, well, you know, Pennywise is fun.
He is.
In a terrifying way.
He's a great villain. He really is.
How about you? Was there anything that shifted from then to now?
Nope.
That's
nope.
It.
I stand by
I stand by everything. Good to know. Let's see. What movie surprised you the most? Did we do that one already?
I mean, kind of. I was thinking Out of Sight for that.
Oh, really okay. I thought that was your new to you. But yeah.
It's all kind of the same. All these questions are similar enough. But yeah.
Yeah. Hacksaw Ridge surprised me the most with how bad it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very surprising to fall flat on your face.
To fall flat. People loved it. You have a note on here about Stephen King Halloween.
I do. I really enjoyed doing this little mini-themed Halloween.
The King-iverse?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was fun, and I liked what we did last Halloween. I just like that we do scary movies during Halloween time. I always think that's fun.
It's a pretty natural thing to do, I think, and there's a lot to choose from. I like that we not only just made it Stephen King or Joe Hill, but that we picked pairs of movies like we did, and then we had the Joe Hill right in the middle, and that they all sort of lined up with this weird psychic powers through line running through them all.
It all connects,
you know,
in a really
all
satisfying
about,
way.
Fear and conquering fear and how that shifts your psychic energy. That really ran through all five movies.
It did.
In a really strange way that was like, you know, we're going to tell people we didn't plan this and they're not going to believe us.
Right. Like, after watching The Shining, every movie after that, I was like, they have The Shining.
They have The Shining.
They have The
yes,
Shining.
It is
they have
the Shining. It is the lens through which I will watch all Stephen King media from now on is, Who shines in this movie?
Any movie I watch, I'll be looking.
I will be. People I see on the street.
Emily the Criminal? Shining.
That's right.
She did not have The Shining. She would have known that that couple were going to rob her.
Well, I don't know. She always wanted to go to South America. Maybe it's because she saw
that she'd end
that
up
she
there.
Was going to South America.
There you go. Confirmed Shining.
That's right. Don't have them come to your apartment, Emily. I don't know, Tony.
Mrs. Torrance will not be happy. We're doing the finger thing.
Yeah,
by the way.
I'm
you guys
sorry.
Can't see
I
that.
Forget. It doesn't really work if you're not in the room with us.
It's hilarious, though, if you can see us. Trust me. That's
that
all
it?
I've got.
Is that
for,
what you got?
All
right.
Our season recap, as far as that goes. I think this is a really solid bunch. And I'm glad we get to wrap out this season on a good note.
Yeah, I think so. It's been really, really cool to do all of these movies. And like I said, to discuss some higher profile movies and not feel like, oh, I don't have anything to say about this.
Right.
That was
give your personal touch to
you
it.
You know, every season, you know, I get, I think, a little other takeaway about, oh, this is why I love doing this show. And it is just sort of like, oh, yeah, now this is a new aspect I like about doing this show. So next season, all blockbusters. Blockbuster animated. We're just doing Pixar movies.
I was going to say, that's going to be our Avengers season.
God.
You would hate me if I did that.
Man, I don't know if I could make it.
There's certain things I know I can't.
I can watch a few MCU movies, but I can't do a whole season.
No.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want to either.
All right. Well, we can close this out and close out this season. But we'll be back for season 8.
We'll be back eventually.
Eventually.
Yes. We don't have a date, but we will be back. And in the meantime, there is more to come. We'll be posting updates, little episodes here and there.
That's right.
You've got your hockey movies that you're...
That's right.
You're very into hockey recently. I didn't know you were so big on sports.
I should do a real hockey movie at the end of it. Just do like Slapshot and... Phil Goes to Camp is still updating on this feed. I'm almost done.
At this point, I think you're torturing yourself.
It's hit and miss. Yes, I'm watching all the Friday the 13th movies for the first time in my life and commenting on them. The Phil Goes to Camp series starts on part 3. I posted part 9 yesterday. I have one more to go. I might do Jason versus Freddy. I'm not sure yet. But talking about like movies of the 70s and how they look different, watching Friday the 13th movie, watching slasher movies from the 80s makes you realize this has been one of my big takeaways. It has been honestly really interesting to watch these movies.
It's like a case study that you're doing.
It makes me realize how sanitized horror movies have become now. Like, there is no nudity in them. There is not as much gore in them. A lot of mainstream horror movies are being repackaged as PG-13. They're being sold to teenagers. You know,
they're
like,
kind of cleaning it up a little bit.
Back when this series started, there was no PG-13 rating. So they just leaned in and everything was R. But teenagers were still going to these movies. You know, there's a ton of nudity in Jason movies. There's, you know, some really creative kills. And it's like, it's kind of fun to watch something that goes, oh, there's just a ton of gratuitous nudity and just shamelessly gratuitous about it. And there's something kind of fun about it. I said on one of the episodes, I'm not saying we need to go back to that, but it's an interesting marker of time where they're just sort of like, look, sex sells. Let's not beat around the bush about it. Let's just throw it out there. And they just did it shamelessly. And it was honestly, I think all but one, maybe two of these movies just has shameless amounts of boobs in it. And it's just one of those things where you're just like, it's so odd to watch now, you know, where you just, oh, it's a little shocking. It's a little surprising.
Is it getting cleaner as the series goes on? Like, as you approach the more modern day, or were they all released relatively like one after the other?
The one I watched yesterday is from 93.
Okay.
It has a pretty graphic scene in it. And then it's followed by very graphic violence.
Sure. You have to, because sex needs to be punished.
It is still
violence.
On this idea of, which is also kind of its time. And I don't know, there's just something about watching all of them in a row like this that makes you just realize, like, oh, this is very, like, this hasn't moved forward. And it's kind of a time capsule of horror.
It's
anyway,
stuck in that time.
I don't want to go on about it here. I'll probably do a recap episode about all of them and talk about stuff like this. But it's,
no, I've loved listening to.
I'm having a lot of fun making these stupid little episodes about it and just kind of clowning on them and talking about things I notice and why this works and why this doesn't work, and then seeing like what the Letterboxd reviews on them are and a lot of the ones that I like. The general Jason fan public doesn't like it.
So they like the bad ones.
Yeah, kind of. It's really strange.
I'm not that surprised.
But you're doing some episodes on the feed, like we talked about as well.
I am. I've released, my Walking Dead thoughts, but then I also have an upcoming House of Usher review kind of thing that I want to post.
Good, good.
And, I have something planned I'm very excited about. I don't want to give too much away, but I'll be exploring a brave new frontier. That's for sure. So,
I'm intrigued.
We'll see, but keep an eye on this feed, and I'll be posting some more mini episodes and such.
Cool. That's going to be happening during the hiatus when I'm done with Jason movies. I'll probably do some mini episodes. We are kind of up in the air about what life happens kind of stuff maybe coming for us in the next year.
We've been pretty busy recently.
We've been busy, and we are eyeing maybe making some life changes here and there. So right now things are up in the air. We are planning on coming back. We're just not sure when. We need some things a little more concrete. Am I being too vague or too specific?
No, I think you're good. We should just say it. Our producer, Leo, has some changes he wants to make.
We're working very hard to meet his demands.
It's difficult to schedule around his very intense...
Very specific schedule.
That's it, yeah. He wants us recording immediately.
That's right. but yeah, we will keep you posted. Keep the, you know, stay subscribed to the feed. We'll be posting, like I said, mini episodes and some updates about when we're coming back.
That's it, yeah.
In the meantime, Aus, how can people get a hold of us?
Well, they can always send us an email at austinandphil@gmail.com.
That's right. Let us know what your favorite movie was that we watched this season.
Yeah. If the fans all had a favorite,
that would be, I'd love to hear that.
Fun.
Or any thoughts you have on anything that we watched.
Or should we do a themeless season next season? Or should we cover one genre?
Do you have an idea for what we can do next season?
Absolutely. Let us know what you'd like to hear. You can do that there. Or you could also keep up to date with what we're watching where. Where could they...
Letterboxd.
That's right, our favorite
social media program for program. Hey, time to watch my favorite social media program.
Got the pictures on.
Letterboxd. Austin is Austin and Rude, and I am Phil Rude on Letterboxd. We each have lists going of what we're watching. I have my Halloween list from last month. I have a list for everything we watch for this show. Check it out. Just hang out over there with us and see what we're watching and read reviews because they're really funny.
Always hilarious.
There's always some great stuff over there. But that's going to do it for this season, Aus.
Wrapping up season 7. It's been
thanks for hanging out with me for another season.
Yeah.
Do you want to read the credits?
Yeah, we did it all ourselves.
Ourselves, yeah.
That's right.
There you have it. We'll see you next time on The Picture Show.
See ya.